The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already, it's Levin Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting you. Today is the anniversary of Hurricane Dorian. I do remember where I was. I was at home. It was a Sunday, and I was cleaning up the kitchen, and then the rain began to fall. And I remember that it was kind of an interesting experience because I had parked my car. I drove an S500 at the time. I parked my car all the way into the yard where I thought it would be safest because I live in South Beach, which ever since the Free National Movement built the Jasmine Gardens constituency has a man-made flooding issue, right? Because my constituency never flooded before they developed Jasmine Gardens, right? And so hopefully one day they realize that they need to somehow dredge the waterway back into Jasmine Gardens and into a runoff somewhere so that my house stops flooding. But this isn't about me. Anyway, so I was at home, I was washing dishes, and I remember the rain began to fall. And I remember thinking to myself, my God, that sounds like all of the rain in heaven. And as I was at home washing the dishes, this was around, I would say, maybe 8 o'clock that night on a Sunday, I had reason to go outside. Now, my house is about one step down or up rather from the actual level of the yard. So maybe a 12 to 18 inch drop. And I remember walking off of the porch and literally the water was about shank high. And for those of you that don't know where your shank is or your shin is, right? That is the piece of leg in between your knee and your ankle. The part that you usually hit to the bedpost or to the boat hitch on the back of the truck. And I remember saying to myself, well, my goodness, what mean is these things? So I reversed my car out. That had already began to take in water, believe it or not. And over on the other side of my yard, there's a wonderful little car ramp. So I pulled up onto the car ramp, which gives me an additional maybe 18 inches or thereabout above where it would have been parked originally. And I remember thinking there might be something catastrophic because they had said that the storm was coming nowhere near Nassau. But if a storm of this magnitude could cause this kind of uproar in Nassau, where it was miles away from, then what exactly would it do to any landmass that it had actually touched? And I remember thinking that in my mind. And so I parked my vehicle, and of course, night came, I went to sleep. I remember waking up and having heard that The hurricane had made landfall in Abaco. And I remember hearing about the devastation in Abaco. Now, interestingly enough with hurricanes, you know, they're a game of rushing roulette. Because the hurricane prior to that one, Irma, or was it Matthew? Matthew. Luckily, I have friends in high places and in low places, and I always tell people it is my friends in low places that I value the most because they are the ones that get things done. So I have one of my friends that said, you know, he's a pilot, and he flew me over into Jamaica and said, you know, that hurricane, you shouldn't have been coming anywhere near Jamaica. It was Irma. Irma wasn't coming anywhere near Jamaica, and that we would fly to Jamaica. So I took that opportunity, and I flew to Jamaica, and literally, when we came back, believe it or not, the weather conditions in Jamaica were actually worse than the weather conditions here in Nassau. There was literally no damage at all. And I remember thinking to myself when Dorian was passing that it's just another storm. We will all go inside our homes. I'm not a big proponent of going to shelters. My house is my shelter, I believe. I'm like a snail or a conch. Whatever is going to happen to me is going to happen to me in here. I built this. I built it as strong as I could. I'm not leaving this. And so I stayed in Dorian. And can I tell you, as a resident of South Beach, and many residents of South Beach suffered this fate because of something that is called a king tide, we ended up with water almost, again, shin high inside our homes. My mother had water in our house for over 2 weeks because the tide wouldn't fall and there were clogged drains in the South Beach area. Notwithstanding that, we're two years away from Dorian. And I have a song that I want to play this morning because, you know, I'm Christian and so I like to motivate people. And I want the people of Abaco to remember that we remember, that everybody remembers, the travesty of Dorian. And as I look in the news, I see my friends in America are having quite a bit of a time. No electricity. They've recently had Hurricane Ida. And it's passed through the same place as Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, these things just do that kind of stuff. So anyway, I'm going to talk about that a little bit today because, you know, there's a whole lot of talk about elections in the air. There's a whole lot of talk about what a new government would represent. What do new governments mean? And I like to consider something that everyone doesn't like to consider. I call it the Obeah of politics, right? And so since we've summoned the spirit of 92, all right, with the calling of the election on August 19th, I want us to also remember what else happened. I think it was the 24th of August, 1992. So, to inspire you all. And then after that, I introduce my guest, and we'll talk about what exactly is to be expected in the coming days. Permit. Mona, how you doing?
I am.
Jesus.
And so there you have it. So the people of Abaco invite you all to accept that, you know, it is well. And it will continue to be well. All right. So anyway, I'm joined in studio by noted meteorologist. He's my guest, Wayne Neely. He is one of the guys I think knows the most things that there are to know about hurricanes anywhere in the entire Bahamas. I don't understand how you could have a conversation with hurricanes and not speak to Wayne Neely. And so I've brought him so that we could talk about what's happening out there in the tropics and what could be expected and some of the things that we ought to be considering. Because, you know, I hear people vying to become my next this and my next that and my next the other thing. And no matter who becomes the next anything around here, this is going to be the first time that we've had an election called in the middle of a hurricane season. This is going to be the first time in since 1992 anyway. Mm-hmm. It's not been done. In 97, the election was held in March, and in 02, it would have been May. In 07, it would have been May. And in 12, it would have been May. And in 17, it would have been May. So in 25 years, we've not had to deal with the simultaneous consequences of what it means to be in an election mode, as well as right in the belly of a hurricane season. Mr. Neely, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Levon. It's been a long time. It's good to be here.
It's good to see you again. So you've heard my thoughts, right? I hear people talking about, you know, what they want to do with the economy once they get in and what they want to do, you know, in various areas of government once they get in, et cetera, et cetera. There's been a lot of talk about Grand Bahama once they're reelected. But I don't hear anybody, Mr. Neely, having a conversation about what if on September 17th, because according to you, one of the most active times in the hurricane season is the midpoint of September.
Yes.
Which is exactly when our elections are going
for. Yes, that's correct. September 10th is the peak of the hurricane season.
The peak of the hurricane season. So our election is the week of the peak of the hurricane.
Yes, you definitely. Yes.
Okay.
And normally from October 15th to September, about 15th or 20th, that's when you have the proliferation of the most hurricanes impacting the North Atlantic during that time. But you have the busiest season.
So within the first month of a hurricane, because you said between September 15th and October 15th.
It's the peak.
So within the first month of being reelected, or in the case of the FNM, or coming to office for the PLP, we could be looking down the barrel of a storm.
Yes.
Mm. What does that translate into?
That, well, if I was calling election and if I was a meteorologist, I would tell him September around that time would be the peak of the season. So maybe either move it up or move it back further.
Mm. Has there been any serious threats to the Bahamas? I see New Orleans is under the gun.
Yes.
Or has recently come from under the gun under Hurricane Ida. What was the strength of that storm?
It was Category 4.
Category 4.
Yes.
And so the storms are still pretty strong.
Yes, they are, definitely. You've had two major hurricanes, which is Category 3 or higher.
Okay.
This season we had 12 named storms.
So far?
Yeah, so far.
Okay.
Two of them major, and one of them was Ida.
Okay. And so just I mean, for the people that haven't lived through the Dorians, right? Because in the Bahamas, I mean, in Nassau, somehow we seem to be very sheltered or protected most times from a storm. But for the people that have not experienced the strength, the wrath of a Category 4, what are some of the damages that you associate with that level of storm?
Well, typically you have a complete structural failure. You have a building, in most cases, would lose its roof, and perhaps the structure of the building itself would be significantly compromised.
Okay.
You have trees damaged, their power lines are torn down. Mm-hmm. With a Category 1, you tend to get minor damage, but with Category 4 and Category 5, those what most meteorologists label them as catastrophic means that the impact could be significant. And we saw that with March of 2016 over New Providence, and you have trees uprooted, you have many places, power lines blown down, and you have severe flooding.
The swelling tides.
Yeah. And like you said, with March occurred during the King Tide.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Dorian occurred during the King Tide as well. And that's the worst scenario that you'd want to have. And that's one reason why you had flooding in Abaco and Grand Bahama.
And in New Providence.
And New Providence.
Yeah, I live in South Beach. My house was flooded almost knee-deep.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now, let's just say there is a new government elected or re-elected, however it pans out. Should they not be consulting with the Department of Meteorology or meteorologists or figuring out a strategy. Where exactly are these hurricanes? What to anticipate? How to anticipate them? Is that kind of thing even happening?
No, I don't think so. I think it's something that's done.
No one has contacted you for sure?
No.
All right. And you are the author of how many hurricane
14
books?
14 books on hurricanes.
14 books on hurricanes.
Dorian coming on shortly.
Wow. And no one has said to you, we are considering taking power. We are considering being reelected. And we need to figure out, what are your predictions? How do we mitigate the damage? Yeah. How do we mitigate the circumstances?
Yeah, well, typically what I would do, I would tell them that if between August 15th and September 15th, mm-hmm. I would tell them try not to hold election donor.
So they've missed the boat on that one already?
Yeah,
they missed the boat on that one.
Second, and same thing, well, tours does happen. It happens with tours all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're traveling in February, they want to know what the weather's going to be like. You can't give them an accurate saying that there's going to be, you're going to get rainfall. What we call, for example, and if you're a tourist coming down to the Bahamas, you want to know whether you're going to have good weather. Mm-hmm. And what I do, we look at climatology. And by that, for example, let's say August. August has 18 rain days, which means that out of the month of August, you have 18 of those with rain days. And let's say January or February, you have like 4 or 5 rain days. Mm-hmm. And so you tell them, look, if you come in on January or February, it'd be ideal time. And you expect to get rainfall. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 times in a month. So which means your chances are pretty good.
Okay.
Now, if you're talking about hurricanes, that's when you get a peak of the hurricane season. 85% of the hurricanes during that time could come from off the African coast. Mm-hmm. And you have what you call tropical or easterly waves coming off the Atlantic, passing through the islands every 3 to 5 days.
Wow.
And in most of the Caribbean, several of those, I'll tell you, there's a high percentage of them coming into a tropical disturbance during August 15th, about September 15th. And that's because you have several factors occurring, you know, between August 15th and September 15th. You have the winds in the atmosphere are pretty light, mm-hmm. excellent for hurricane formation, because the hurricanes, for hurricanes to go and thrive, they need what you call thunderstorms or air low pressure. And
okay.
You have rotation, but that you have a greater chance of storms forming and actually making either a tropical depression or a tropical storm or hurricane.
Now, it may just be my mind. I'm not meteorologically trained at all, actually. But, you know, I've been around boats for quite a bit of my life. Yes. And this weather seems to be sporadic and almost schizophrenic, if you ask me. Some days it is almost apocalyptic. Yes. Outside there. I don't understand it. There are many different variations of weather these days that I've never seen before. Like rain now falls without cloud cover. You know, you go from a bright, very sunny day to instant, massive over cloud skies. And is there something happening out there?
Well, most people blame climate change of the sporadic nature of the rainfall. I know from experience, personal experience, and from the records, mm-hmm. within the last 10 years, we've been significantly below average when it comes to rainfall.
Okay.
We've been probably about 60% below average. Below average. Mm.
How does that factor in with hurricanes?
It doesn't impact hurricanes in a significant way, but what happens is that, I'm talking about in the Bahamas, in region-wide, mm-hmm. The rainfall trend is almost normal, but in the Bahamas, we're below average with rainfall. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. There is another question that comes to my mind. Have you had an opportunity to assess Abaco and or Grand Bahama?
Yes, I did. I traveled there for my book on Dorian. I traveled there several times, both of them, Freeport and Grand Bahama. Freeport and Abaco.
Do you think either one of them is in a position to take another hit?
No, from my experience. And in fact, many of the persons I expressed and I spoke to, they talked about the lack of progress on those islands. Mm. Being hit by a double whammy, you had Dorian, mm-hmm. sorry, you had COVID, which actually impacted a year later. Mm-hmm. And so which means that inhibited the development on those islands in a significant way. Mm-hmm. And you also had, the government is facing economic challenges. So mm-hmm. whether they can cater to those islands like they should, that's something that remains to debate.
So definitely in the case of a hurricane, we would definitely be looking at another national evacuation more than likely.
Yes.
There would be nowhere for them to shelter on.
Nowhere to shelter. And that, in mind you, it has happened before. Typically, right now in Abaco, many of those persons still have tarp on the roofs. Even in Grand Bahama, mm-hmm. you still have tarp on the roof, and that's almost 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And there's very little progress, especially on Abaco. I'm surprised of the lack of progress. And we've had that before in the 1926, in the 1920s, in 1926 hurricane season, you had three hurricanes impacting the Bahamas. The first one you had in July was called the Great Nassau Hurricane of 96. Mm-hmm. They didn't name them back then, but okay. July was the Nassau Hurricane of 1926. Mm-hmm. And those persons, the homes were destroyed. They then started building their homes again. Mm-hmm. Then in September, another storm called the Great Miami Hurricane devastated and destroyed all the buildings that were previously that they started rebuilding. Mm-hmm. And September damaged all those buildings. Then October came and they started rebuilding again. And all those homes were destroyed.
In the same year?
In the same year, yeah.
Wow.
And they said...
Have we seen hurricanes back-to-back like that in
recent times?
Yeah.
No.
Jane and Francis, maybe?
Jane and Francis, yes.
Okay.
2004, 2005.
Yeah, it was back-to-back.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to this day, Francis and Jane and Wilma of 2005,
Wilma. Yeah.
The country still have not recovered from those. And that's something that you don't realize the impact of hurricanes because it tends to bring a country to its knees mm-hmm. in many more ways than one. You had,
now, yeah. What about the structures, right? Because there are some structures that haven't been as severely compromised, particularly yes. in Grand Bahama.
Yes.
When you consider the impact that they have suffered under a Dorian, there may be people like over there that are people like myself. I'm not leaving my house, right?
Yes.
And naturally, it is because I don't understand how the block and steel in the church could be any stronger than the block and steel in my house. I build this. I don't know who built that church, right? And so there are people like me that will not leave. But yes. I imagine that if my house has been hit with a Category 4 or hit with a Category 5, there may be invisible, compromised, structural in imperfections at that point.
Yeah.
How many of those homes do you imagine are in the position, although you may not be able to see the damage, to take another Category 4 or 5?
Not many of them. And even on a whole, a Category 5 hurricane is something that very few man-made structures can survive a Category 5 hurricane without being impacted in a significant way.
Mm.
You have complete buildings, you have complete structural failure. And that was on Grand Bahama and Abaco. And you have the impact of what do you call a catastrophe.
Mm.
And many, like I said, many man-made structures are not capable of withstanding that strong 157-mile power grid. And with Dorian, you had 185 miles yeah. power with a gust of 220.
Wow.
So that's significantly great. It's very few structures. And I've interviewed many persons. I've interviewed hundreds of persons with Dorian
mm-hmm.
and Grand Bahama and in Abaco. And many of those persons, most of them, they decide to stay in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because in most cases, live on. Whether you look at it or not, if you're in your home, you feel more comfortable. You feel more at ease.
Right.
Than going to a shelter. That's the average. That's the average behemoth. Now, what happens is that you have people with the average behemoth have lack of hurricane experience.
Okay,
and that impact that had a tremendous impact on the death toll. And for example, in Dorian, I interviewed the police officers who went before Dorian struck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Prime Minister, Honorable Hubert Minnis, he went on radio said, "Look, I'm 6'1". And they said the hurricane is going to be 18 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the hurricane is going to be 21 feet, sorry. Meteorologists were wrong. They went up to 28 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there's three of me. And he's a pretty tall man. And so most persons, even though they listened to that,
mm-hmm.
they stayed in their homes, especially in the mud and Pigeon Pea. They stayed in their homes because they felt comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, me, if I have a choice between staying in my home and going to a crowded shelter, the normal 90% of people will probably stay in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. They stayed. In fact, many of the Honorable Darrell Linefield,
mm-hmm.
he went out and they held a meeting on the park. They also went to each house.
And they did the walkabout.
Yeah, said, look, please leave. They said, this is going to be an impactful storm.
Right.
And many of them, they told them that they would leave in about 10, 15 minutes or they would leave soon after they leave. Many of those persons, the officers who I spoke to said, many of those persons who we spoke to and promised that we would leave
Never left.
And said, many of them, I had to lift their bodies out of the rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize this lady, or I recognize this gentleman.
As someone I spoke to.
Wow. And they faithfully. The problem is that they lack hurricane experience. Most average behemoth, for example, in another case with March of 2016, I had a cousin of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in South Beach, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Mr. Neely, they said we should evacuate from South Beach in low-lying area because it's low-lying. And I told him, yes, please do, because I said the storm is going to come from the south and the waters in South Beach are extremely low, which is a heaven sent for us active storm surge.
Wow.
And so he said, I'm going to leave. So he went home, convinced his, told his wife and his child, said, let's pack up some things, we go. And Wayne said, we must leave.
Okay.
And he said, his wife said, oh, don't worry about Wayne. Wayne obviously hurricane coming. Mm-hmm. Said, those meteorologists, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So he stayed. And he said, when the peak of the storm was too late to leave. And he said, he saw the water started rising from the door. And he said, suddenly about 6 inches. And then within the space of 30 minutes.
Yeah, no, the water rises.
It was very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what, and he said, look, say, I looked outside my two Japanese vehicles, I see them start spinning around and being washed out with the flood waters. And he was one of about persons. And what happened, he said, look. And he said, during the peak of that storm, he remembered, he reminded himself, he said, you told me we ain't doing no but storms. Mm-hmm. Say, but I'm just water's 5 feet, and how are we going to get out?
Yeah.
So, and he reminded himself, said, look, I didn't know it was going to be this bad.
Wow.
And so that was his wife response to him.
No, you're very right. I recall, Mr. Neely, right after the storm, Hurricane Matthew.
Yes.
Because interestingly enough, it would have been, I think, around October or November of 2016.
Yes.
Because I was on the ground. I was on the ground at the time campaigning as the independent candidate in South Beach. And I remember going in right after the storm, once the water had dried up, because a lot of the homes in South Beach are supplied by well water because, you know, we had that low water pressure issue in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to try the chlorination bit going in the back there with those wells before people, because as long as BEC cuts the power on, people will start using the water.
Yes.
And so I went in with the chlorination exercise, chlorination and filtration exercise. And I remember meeting some people who literally 10, maybe 12 days after the storm was still so traumatized.
Yes.
That they couldn't speak. I remember going in South Beach and seeing a lady sitting in the burnt grass in her yard.
Yes.
With all of her furniture across the street, just staring at it.
Yeah.
And she was lost for words. She said, I can't build this back. There was a gentleman, he's deceased now.
Yeah.
But the entire back wall, he lives right on the beach. The entire back wall of his house fell in.
Yes.
There was another lady and two children, and this was probably the most heart-wrenching of them all. Luckily for her, there were two trailer heads parked in the yard, right? One, I think, strapped to a container.
Yes.
And she said, the wind wasn't bad, Mr. Miller. She said, at all.
The water.
She said, but when the water came, she said she watched as the water stood up on the beach.
Yes.
And came towards the house, and she grabbed her two little children. It was this one woman and two children.
Yes.
And she took them into the trailer head. She said, we still got a little damp.
Yes.
But the truck kept us safe.
Right.
And I couldn't, it was, because I didn't stay. I have a cousin by the name of Toya who has a wonderful house.
Yeah.
So I was at Toya's house. We was grilling hot dogs on the back enclosed porch with the generator running, right? That's where I went.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have imagined it.
Yes.
I couldn't have imagined it. I walked the ground and it all seemed like a horror movie. It happened.
Yes.
And what you're telling me is that what happened in Abaco, what happened in Grand Bahama,
was worse.
South
than
Beach
that.
Is child's play.
Yes,
compared to that.
Yes.
And I see all the pom pom waving, and I don't want to implicate you politically here, but I see all the pom pom waving.
Yes.
I hear all the rallies going. I hear everybody talking about we can build this thing in Grand Bahama, and I hear all sorts of the economic this thing and the COVID that thing. And I'm sitting here wondering, these fellas must forget they running to be the government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And the hurricane, no, I mean, this is very serious. And these hurricanes, I think in the last maybe 2 months, we've had about 5 hurricanes pass us so close.
Yes.
I don't understand why we ain't in like an uproar around here that there is no national evacuation plan.
Yes.
There definitely is no shelter because they haven't built that one in Abaco yet. What is the plan? And are they not coming to reach people like you to try and develop the hurricane, supposed hurricane plan?
No. Well, I think one of the things that I spoke on another talk show, they said that one thing that the government at the time, and I think all governments was negligent in this fact. That, in other words, they didn't have mandatory evacuation codes.
Mm-hmm.
The Honorable Hubert Ingraham, after Hurricane Andrew,
many of those persons,
he talked about Andrew and Floyd, he talked about having mandatory evacuation. Nothing was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
The Honorable Perry Christie, after Matthew of 2016, he talked about a mandatory evacuation. Nothing was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I understand the Honorable Hubert Minnis, I think there's something in law now
right.
where that you force, because what happened in 2016 with Machu, those persons in South Beach, and the only thing that saved them, I talk about this a lot. In 2016 with Machu, there were two honorable gentlemen, the Commissioner of Police, Ellison Greenslade and Leon Bettle.
Mm-hmm.
Typically during a hurricane, you advise people to move out before the hurricane starts mm-hmm. because once the hurricane comes along, the police officer is going to stay put until that storm because you're not going to...
We can't risk them.
We can't risk that. And same thing with defense force officers. Mm-hmm. You have them in place until after the storm impacts.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened, those persons in South Beach were calling at such an alarming rate. Many of those persons were trapped in their homes mm-hmm. in South Beach because the water, like mm-hmm. you said, mm-hmm. the waters are over 5 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
5 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Honorable Commissioner of Police, Ellison Greenslade, and the Senior Deputy Commissioner, Leon Greenslade, Leon Bethel.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a determination that, look, we have to rescue some of those persons.
Mm-hmm.
And they took several dump trucks and a tractor and rescued those persons. Had that not occurred, I think we would have fatalities in Machu. And I think another reason why Machu didn't incur fatalities like Dorian was that Machu occurred during the day. So in other words, when you went out in the water, you're 5 feet in water, wading through the water, you can actually see. But at night, when it's dark, you can't see any danger in front of you or any projectiles coming towards you.
Yeah. And most weather conditions. I did search and rescue for a short time in my life when I was a much younger
gentleman.
running kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
These days, I don't go nowhere near the water. But I used to do search and rescue missions, and I always tell people, search and rescue missions predominantly, and this is why I think people that go out on Sundays just to have a jolly in a boat must be crazy.
Yeah.
Most times you end up in a search and rescue incident, it's going to be right before darkfall.
Yes.
I assure you, the fun that you were having when the weather was wonderful and smooth and nice and warm is going to become treachery.
Yeah.
Once the sun, every weather condition you could imagine increases once the sun disappears. I don't know how that happens.
Yes.
But literally the seas get rougher, the wind blows more. It's if it was a bad day in the daytime,
it's worse.
You are about to have a terrible time at sea at nighttime.
Mm.
And so I can completely understand why having Matthew hit at daytime was so much better than Dorian.
Than Dorian, yeah.
Which hit, I think, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I have a friend of mine that actually lived through Dorian.
Yes.
And she went down there. She's a government employee. She accounts. She said, Levin, I was in my room. And I heard the wind. It was about 10 o'clock. It was regular wind. It was a regular windy day in Abaco. She said, and so I said, well, I'm going to go to sleep. She went to sleep, she said, and then she heard a loud thump at about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said she went down. She lived in a townhouse.
Yes.
She's on the top floor of a townhouse.
Yes.
And she said she looked downstairs. And when she looked downstairs, the thump that she had heard was the wall of the townhouse, the bottom floor, collapsing.
Wow.
And the stove, she said, even I watch as my stove and my washing machine walk out the house and there was nothing I could do to stop them. Yeah. And she actually lived with absolute terror in her heart, having lived through that. And she said, like, what if I didn't live in a two-story, like, what if I was in a single-story building?
Yes.
There would have been no way for me to survive that.
Yes.
She said, and the water rushed in at about 30, maybe 40 miles an hour. She said, so even if I didn't drown in the house, there would be no way to keep myself in that house against the force of water.
No, you can't.
Wow.
And I have a lot of recollections of the storm. There's a gentleman who, he decided to stay in his home. He has a business in Marsh Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's upstairs now. He said when the water came, the water passed the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to go into the second floor. Eventually, he almost lost his life trying to escape from that building.
Wow.
And that's how high the water was. And like you said, 20 up to 28 feet with storm surge.
Wow.
21.
And the average two-story building, your top floor is about 14 feet at max.
And people think that the tragedy of a storm is the wind. It's not the wind. 75% of the deaths are attributed to the storm surge.
Mm.
So you're going to get three or four persons dying from the storm surge. And most of the persons who died in the storm surge from Dorian.
Wow. Now, I see a lot of people. I actually see there's a lady somewhere around here that is selling life jackets, right? This is why I think they should teach survival in all schools, because she's selling, I think they call them the B-type or B-rated life jackets, the one you use on jet skis.
Yes.
Let me tell you, in a storm, that jacket will do absolutely nothing for you, right? Literally, you have about 2 hours before that jacket starts to sink. No, it's true. In life-saving instances, you need what is called a type one life jacket.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty, it ain't fancy, and it ain't comfortable, but it don't sink.
It don't sink,
right. It's the one that goes around your neck. You see the one that goes around your back. You tie it around your back.
Right.
It ain't good looking.
Yeah, right? But it do the job.
But it works, right?
Okay.
What do you say to people that say, oh, well, I added a life jacket to my hurricane supply kit? Because that is popular language now. Oh, we've got to outfit every house with a life jacket. And I get it. I get the thought around it, right?
Yeah.
But what that means is you can never start floating. You might float from here to Cuba.
Yeah.
You understand my point? Yes. Like, so, I mean, what do you say to people that say, I'm going to just ride out my storm, I have my life jacket, and that'll keep me safe?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. And I've seen that with prior storms. For example, in 2005, in Hurricane Wilma, there was at the time in Grand Bahama, there was a lady, and the police went to her home and said, this area is in low-lying, we advise you to move.
Mm-hmm.
And she told them, said, look, I'm going to take my chance and stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And the Honorable Obi Wilscombe went with them the second time,
mm-hmm.
and said, look, the experts advising us to stay, for you to leave. Say, this is going to be, area's going to be flooded.
In West End,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, we'll take our chance. We're going to be safe. Our house is well built. My daddy built this house in the strong.
Right.
And the third time, Obi Wilscombe went back again, mm-hmm. with police officers, said, look, they're advising you, my suggestion to you is please leave.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, we'll take our chance. And she stayed with her family. And when Wilma came along, the water went up to the rafters of the house.
Is this the one where they lost the baby?
The baby, yes.
Yeah, this is the one where they lost the baby.
Crystal Pintad was, Matario Pintad was the one-year-old.
Yeah, she had a one-year-old and a six-year-old.
Yes.
I remember that story
The uncle, and the uncle was holding the baby. And when the water came, flooded to the rafters.
Yeah, they lost the one-year-old.
They never found themselves 1 year later. I mean, several hours later.
Yeah.
And I interviewed her, and that was one of the most, I've interviewed hundreds of persons.
Yeah.
I'd venture to say thousands,
yeah.
For my previous books. And that was my most difficult interview, because she said, Wayne, I will always remember Wilma. Said, you know, and this, if I can go back and change the hands of time and change it, I would.
There is another story that comes to my mind. I remember the Thomases. I remember the Thomases. I think the story is the daddy and three of the kids. They all opted to stay.
Yes.
And the mother opted to stay.
Yes.
I don't know how the mother survived. I think she is still alive. But I'm almost certain that the daddy and three of the children washed away at sea.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about not found a couple hours later, never to have been seen from again since Dorian.
Are you talking about Barry with Dorian?
Yes.
Yeah. She was the one. She actually, I don't know how she was saved, but
I don't know how she survived. It's a God move.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how she survived.
She woke up. She, 2 days later, I mean a day and a half later, and on the waters,
right,
and alive,
and couldn't find her husband. Or
couldn't find
her
husband or children. They lost. Yeah,
I think the last sight of them was he swam towards or something.
The water,
never to be seen again.
Never saw them again, and that's another issue that we have.
We've got to take a break. Okay. That is something that is, and we've got to think about these things. You see, so when I say, and this is Levan Miller now. When I say to you that the difficulty I have with being happy about parties having elections in a hurricane season, or governments being elected in a hurricane season, I cannot be happy because I don't hear them reaching deep enough in the bag about the thing I think is going to be of the most immediate importance. And I don't know if they've factored that in. Anyway, I'm going to go to the break. This is Levan Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm on your radio, which means I'm unleashed. And if that's happening, that means it's somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. Don't move. I've got more show for you. We'll be back on the next side of the break.
Hello, Bahamas. My name is Dr. Dwayne Sands. I was born and raised in Centerville, in the heart of the valley, Nassau, Bahamas. I'm a proud Bahamian. I've been fortunate to represent the great people of Elizabeth for the last 5 years. It has always been my dream to serve my country, and I have been involved in the political process on the front line since 2009. I am very, very proud of the support of my family who have been with me from the beginning and who are still with me to this day. In particular, my wife, Larika, and all of my children, and actually there's quite a few of them. I'm actually a cardiovascular surgeon. What that means is I take on the sickest people with the biggest problems every day. And so for me, the political process to deal with the challenges facing our country is pretty much par for the course. It's what I do every day. I am happy to be a part of the great team of the Free National Movement under the leadership of Dr. Hubert Minnis. We are indeed Elizabeth Strong.
This has been a paid political announcement by the FNM candidate for Elizabeth.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
This message.
This has been a paid political announcement by the independent candidate for Pine Ridge.
Welcome back, Leva Miller here. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm Unleash on your radio. Wayne Neely is joining me in case you're just tuning in. We're talking about hurricanes, the possibility of hurricanes. What does it mean? What does it translate into for a new government or a re-elected government? Whomever it is, though, we are going to be on election week in the peak of the hurricane creation portion of the hurricane season. And I think that that is something that we ought to start having real conversations about. I'm going to let you hear the clip, though, the mass confusion that took place in the wake of Hurricane Dorian. And these are the kinds of things that I'm hopeful that no government, particularly the FNM, because they had the opportunity to have lived through it.
Yes.
Hopefully they have learned the lessons that were to be learned in the learning experience that is now Hurricane Dorian. Let's go to the clip.
There may be legitimate, appropriate justification for the change, but the explanation has not been given to the public.
When he spoke in Parliament last Thursday, Sand said he noticed hundreds, if not thousands, of names were gone from the list of the missing when it was transferred from social services to the Royal Bahamas Police Force. Since then, a firestorm has erupted, with National Security Minister Marvin Dames expressing shock and disappointment, saying his recent remarks in the House are particularly surprising given that as Minister of Health, he played a leading role in the government's Hurricane Dorian response and restoration. He was afforded every opportunity to voice his concerns about the process and offer solutions to improve it. Dames added, the ministry finds the former minister's most recent comments disingenuous. His comments malign the good name and reputation of the hardworking men and women in uniform who continue to this day to make sacrifices to help those families affected by Dorian. Dames also contradicted a statement made by Assistant Commissioner of Police Solomon Cash, who said just 3 weeks ago that the list of those missing remained at 33. According to Dames, That list stands at 279. Political observers have also questioned the timing of Dames' response, seeing that when Sands made those comments in Parliament, Dames was seated just across from the former health minister but said nothing, and neither did Social Services Minister Frankie Campbell. But still, there's the question everyone wants answered by Sands. Why now?
As a member of cabinet, I agreed to, was bound, and still am bound by secrecy and collective responsibility. And certainly there are things that I could say, things I could not say. Things change all of the time. Not everything that a person may feel personally rises to the point of resignation.
So we asked Sands, as Minister of Health, when he noticed that the list of names had drastically decreased when it was moved from social services to national security, what did he do?
I think it's important to know that these things are ventilated in camera, in private, and sometimes publicly. I've answered your question.
Sands recently called for a coroner's inquest into the handling of the missing and deceased following the passage of Hurricane Dorian. He said the least government can do is unfold everything and give a step-by-step process of how things were done.
I think we would do the people justice by a step-by-step explanation what happened. The public, the grieving public, would also appreciate such an approach.
Stay connected with things and people.
So there you have it. The person responsible for the police numbers says 33. The recent former minister at the time, says there were thousands.
Yes.
The minister comes and says there was 279. Mm-hmm. Frankie Campbell, I think he gave some number like 53 or thereabout.
Yeah.
That kind of confusion, is it normal in a hurricane?
No, I think for a modern day storm, I think they botched that part of it. Because first example. To this day, I try to get, for Dorian, I tend to write based on facts. I tried to get from the coroner's court, from the commissioner of police, and from NEMA. Everyone sent me the different persons, this person, that person. I never really got the official death toll. Mm-hmm. And they said the official death toll is 63.
Mm-hmm.
That's 63 in Abaco and 11 in Grand Bahama. Now, what is querying is the actual amount missing, I think. When they first started the process, I think they did a tremendous job. First of all, the first day you had, say, four persons died. Next day you had eight persons. I'm just giving you, I'm not saying the actual. And the third day that. And then for some strange reason, they just stopped counting.
Wow.
And that's where, and it's a simple process. If you put a body on flatbed truck, that's one person, and you have to put them all at one place, you come in at the clinic in Marsh Harbor.
Right.
If you kick 10 bodies off, that's 10 persons.
That's 10, yeah.
Yeah. And then the next day, you get five. The next day, you count, that's 15.
Yeah.
But however, they botched the process. And I wrote about this in Dorian. I think one of the things that there's several things they did. When they stopped counting,
mm-hmm.
they actually made it more difficult because, first of all, you had a lot of international persons who actually felt for the Bahamas and who saw those persons in Abaco and Grand Bahama mm-hmm. needing help. So once they stopped counting, the media in some ways lost count. And I remember after Dorian, BBC took me to Abaco, CNN took me to Abaco, My Radar took me to Nova, and PBS took me to Abaco.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them were chased. And they went to film in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they got there, police officers and defense officers said, look, you can't film here.
Wow.
And not just with one organization. And so they got to say, why don't your government don't want us to cover the storm?
So it was like a cloak of uncertainty.
Right. And in other words, if someone in let's say, in New York
mm-hmm.
don't see the damage from in Abaco, they tend not to donate.
Yeah, yeah.
And they talked about this. They said a lot of persons want to contribute.
Visually stimulated.
That's right. They see that person. Oh my goodness! We must have the Bahamas and donate. But when after about a week, less than that, you stop having those news reporters and those persons covering the mud or Pigeon Pea or parts of Abaco.
Wow.
I remember the process to get those persons. I went to every government official to get to approval. No one wanted.
And you account that police officers that had in Pigeon Pea have said to you that, man, when we went back, we saw the faces of people that we asked.
We told, yes, we told. And they
so,
can't.
They so
can't
there were talk. Dead people.
There were dead people. Said, look.
And it don't take a week to count 63.
One officer said, look, I saw this lady and she promised me 50. She's going to leave in 15, 20 minutes. When I went there.
She was dead.
And we assured, when I went back, I had to pick up dead body off.
Yeah.
Put her on the truck.
Yet there are people in Abaco that are buried in graves with numbers and not names because they claim they couldn't identify anybody.
Yeah.
That is an amazing thing. We nearly be out of time. Thank you for joining
me. It's my
me.
Pleasure.
I appreciate it. Somebody's asking, where are you from? He's an Andres boy.
I'm Andres, South Andres.
South Andres boy. Very good.
My mother, well, South Andres and Acklands. My grandmother was from Acklands.
Okay.
Justice Acklands. And my father's, on my father's side, was from Andres.
I appreciate and your Utra. Expertise. Yeah, I no appreciate problem. You for coming, Mr. Neely. Anyway, it's leaving Mel. I'm ending the show a little bit early because I got another inspirational song I want to play for y'all. Hopefully, y'all are the God of all grace, the comforter, and the giver of all peace. Rest and abides with you all as we celebrate or commemorate the second anniversary of the Hurricane Dorian.
I've had some weary days and some sleepless nights. But when I look around, yeah, I think things over. All of my good days outweigh my bad days. I won't complain. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can hardly see the road. I asked a question, Lord. Lord, why so much pain? But He knows what's best for me. Although my weary eyes, they can't see. So I'll just say, thank you, Lord. I won't complain. God has been so good to me. Have you been good? He is me.